keep Brother Lowell in our prayers as he comes and speaks to us.
Make one more brief announcement. Thank you for all of your cooperation. And with the Apple Project yesterday, Judy reports, I think we have 5 bushels yet that would benefit from a new home. So if there's any of you that missed out or would like to take advantage of that, talk to her afterward. Blessings and challenges in brotherhood. Is brotherhood found in the Bible? Well, I didn't say. It's a trick question. Is the word brotherhood found in the Bible? Let's start there. You don't think so? Any other ideas? Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king, 1 Peter 2:17. And I think there's one other passage in the Old Testament, in Zechariah 11. Then I cut asunder mine other staff, even bands, that I might break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. And I don't remember ever having that in our as a memory verse in Sunday school. But what about the concept of brotherhood? The concept of brotherhood permeates the church life, permeates the New Testament, I think. We desperately need each other. You know, some of the old cliches actually say it fairly well. United we stand, divided we fall. I appreciated, Shane, that choice of songs, though they weren't so familiar, but they had good messages relating to the topic here this evening. No man is an island. There was a pop song from probably back in the 60s about no man is an island, no man stands alone. I'm not sure how it all went, but it spoke into this kind of a thing of us needing each other. You know, in the armed forces, there's battles that are fought. They're fought with elaborate support, interplay within the various branches, the various individuals. Successful ball teams are those who have learned to capitalize on the strengths of their players and also to capitalize on the weak points in their opponents. view church will define how we perceive brotherhood. There's different ways that people view church. Excuse me. Some people tend to view church as a vendor of goods and services. It's a place like a gas station or a quick stop that you stop and you get fueled up for the week ahead. For others, maybe church is entertainment. It's the preacher that gets up there and entertains from Sunday to Sunday. In that way, it's like church is a spectator sport. It's something that you go and you watch, but you don't actively participate in. And I think these are common views across our world, across our country. But I think these views are both fundamentally wrong. How would you say that the church is? How would you understand the church? If we're going to be using metaphors, maybe you even have a metaphor that would describe it. If it's a game, where are we in this church or in this game? Church is more than just a game. We're the team. We are the players. We're the ones who make up this team, okay? And oftentimes this game isn't just a game of shuffleboard. Not a spectator sport. Maybe it's a contact sport like football or soccer. We're in the middle of it. How we perceive brotherhood shapes our whole view of the church. And how we practice that brotherhood tells us how the vitality and the life of our church will be. In brotherhood, as we join hands with each other, we are a united force against the enemy of our souls. When we fail in brotherhood, we are left alone. We are left vulnerable to the attacks of the enemy without. You know, if we're talking about doing church, church isn't the fancy show horses that are kept in the stall and fed their fancy rations with their braided tails and manes, but it's the workhorses out in the field that are sweating and that are turning the soil. Jesus spoke of his church in Matthew 16. What did he say in Matthew 16 about his church and how the church will stand or the church will be? The very gates of hell will not prevail against the church of the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, a true church will be standing. The true church will be standing on that final day. Our success or failure here as a local church at Center will be significantly impacted on how we view and how we practice brotherhood. Yes, Gary. Yeah.
Of the fight, I would like to quote from 1 Peter 5.
Go ahead.
There is the usage in the different names of brotherhood in verse 9, and set in this, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him steadfast in your faith, knowing that the same sufferings are
I think this 1 Peter 5 is an admonition to pastors especially, and we want to actually be looking at verse, I think, 5 in this passage, if I'm remembering right, that starts out somewhere, feed the flock of God, maybe verse 2, over which the Holy Ghost has made you overseers, something like that. I have a vision, I have a burden for our church, and I feel that I am, I don't know, I'm probably a poor candidate to be speaking about this, but I think there's tremendous potential as we understand some of the implications of brotherhood and this potential that we haven't tapped and that collectively I think that we can work together and God can reveal things to us. How would you define brotherhood if you were giving a definition of brotherhood? Body of believers would be one in this context. Similar to a family. That's good. Okay. Let me just back up to what Henry said. Brother is actually a term that's used to denote members of a common family. And that, I think you're getting at very good. I didn't find just a real good, I kind of tried to analyze this myself before I went to the dictionary, I think. But people that are united by a common cause, a common creed, I think the dictionary said that an association of men with some common aim, characteristic, belief, or profession. Then, of course, in the Christian Brotherhood, we get some of these other aspects that are more pointed. And obviously we'll be talking about the Christian Brotherhood this evening. Okay, is brotherhood necessary? Rhetorical question. Is it necessary? Yeah, okay. Do you always find it easy to practice brotherhood? Second nature? Maybe not always. Why are reasons that we shy away from practicing brotherhood? Our own selfish will, and what was the other?
Makes us vulnerable.
Hard work. It's hard work.
It takes time.
Takes time.
Fear of rejection.
It can be messy and dirty, right? Brotherhood isn't always real tidy. Brotherhood costs us something. Someone said something about vulnerability. You know, we can refuse brotherhood in an effort to protect ourselves. But ironically, that leaves us alone and vulnerable for the attacks of the enemy. Does that make sense? Okay. Tonight, I want to spend some time looking at specific areas of brotherhood. And I want your help now here at the outset to get different aspects of brotherhood. What are different ways or different situations where brotherhood works, or different ways where we should practice brotherhood? I'm not quite sure, but how do you like to see brotherhood work in the church? What are areas? Brotherhood helps us for accountability, okay? I want to take some notes. So. Very well. Okay, the bearing of each other's burdens. And that was in the passage that Michael read. What else? To encourage each other. Thank you, John. What else?
There are some practical and material ways that a brotherhood can bless. And I just want to thank those who did that for us on Monday evening.
Okay. Encourage in material ways. Okay. To help find truth.
Point out blind spots.
Point out blind spots.
Discern God's will.
Discern God's will.
Restoration is another important part of brotherhood.
Okay, brotherhood for the goal of restoration. That would have also come from the passage that Michael read from. Well, I think this is a good place to get us kicked off. I don't have all of those well developed in this topic, but those are very much along the line of the themes that I was hoping that we would look at. Brotherhood. Tell me when it's sharp. Right there? Okay. Blessings and challenges in brotherhood. Brotherhood helps us find God's will. Proverbs 11, verse 14. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. Brotherhood helps us to find God's will. Well, I kind of wanted to read from. Can you read it up here or not?
Yeah.
Okay. One of you said, I believe, discern God's will. Was that you, Julian? Okay. When we are seeking God's will, you know, I don't always hear God's voice perfectly. But it helps when I can compare what I think I'm hearing with what other people are to give some confirmation or some direction. I think of Daryl and Karen after last week's presentation. Daryl, I overheard him say, or maybe I was in on the conversation, that it was a blessing in sharing some of these things with their church family. Now, I don't know where all God will be leading Daryl and Karen, but they have a vision within themselves, and they have shared it now with the brotherhood. And as a brotherhood, we can help to flesh out, confirm, give direction, whatever, to this vision. We don't know all the twists and turns in this vision or in this goal. But as a brotherhood, we can unite with them and we can help give direction by the collective voice of the Holy Spirit with each one of us and to share a vision. Joe Kipfer just last Sunday spoke about, spoke kindly, I don't remember the words, but of his affinity with the local body here. And I think maybe he referred to it to us as the family. I'm not quite sure. I don't remember. Brotherhood is so critical in seeking God's will. My brother can help me identify if the voice that I think I'm hearing is in fact God's voice, or if it's another voice, a stranger. Brotherhood can initiate, affirm, and confirm a call to a specific church, to specific work. Someone look up Acts 13, verse 1, and read verse 1 through 3 as soon as you find it. Is someone getting it? Okay, I don't know if I've ever noticed before, but in that verse 1, it talks about Barnabas and Simeon, that was called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene and Manaen, and Saul, and talked about some of their background, whatever. Was this the name of their minister's bench, their church leaders? I don't know. But it was like these people got their heads together, and the voice of the brotherhood was that we're going to send out Saul and Barnabas to be missionaries. And oh, what an effective team, what an effective model that was. And there are tremendous needs. Let me just say there's tremendous needs all over over the world. There's needs here in Partridge, there's needs in Yoder, there are needs in the south side of Hutchinson, and there's needs as far away as Nepal or Bangladesh or Turkey. You know, there may be lone rangers who slink off to some mission field or to some mission work. God called me, and I'm going to go. You know, God may be able to use a lone ranger, but I would just warn you to be prepared for some fairly bumpy ground. If things don't work out like you expected them to, and likely they won't, it's good to have the group to come back to and to have them put their arms around you and to cry with you and to regroup with you. And if things do work out well, it's kind of nice to be able to come back and share the success with the people who have supported you in prayer. Judy and I, in the time that we spent in Nicaragua, we keenly felt the support and the help of you back here. And when things didn't work out the way that we had expected they might have, it was so reassuring that we had been in it together up until that point, and it was so so encouraging that we were still walking and working together. Brotherhood is critical in forming church policies and decisions. Acts 15, we have the Jerusalem Council where they got together. It wasn't just a one-man deal. It wasn't a papal edict coming down from somewhere, but it was people that got together, and it seemed good to them and the Holy Ghost to ask for these things. Brotherhood is critical in forming those types of things. Brotherhood can confirm or redirect a self-felt call. You know, if someone feels a call to church leadership and no one confirms that call, it can make for a relatively small church fellowship. I recently heard of someone who was feeling a call to a certain type of ministry. That call had not been confirmed. It probably will never be confirmed. The person who was relating this to me said something like this: that has caused no end of problems, his motivation. And further, he's well suited to do what he has been asked to do. But that frustration, and the brotherhood can help in giving direction to either a call or a call that possibly is a misguided call. Brotherhood can help us determine God's timing in relation to a call. Moses felt that strong call to be the deliverer of the people. And when he had attempted it on his own strength, fell flat on his face. And it was as he waited on the Lord, and as that call was affirmed and confirmed, he was ready to go forth. You know, there may be a person 18 years old that feels that God may sometime be calling him to some position of church leadership. But that brotherhood can help to discern the timing. You remember the words of Paul to Timothy, where he said about the qualifications for a leader, that he should not be a novice, lest he be lifted up in pride, something like that. Brotherhood can even help decide when a person may have served his usefulness in a given position. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to have different of the lay positions that are available here at Center Church. And I felt fulfillment in many of those different positions. But I've been blessed to see people younger than me coming up and taking some of those positions that I used to hold. I can see those younger people that are serving as a threat to my relevance, or I can see it as a healthy transition in church life. When some of us that are older selfishly hang on to those positions, it makes it hard for the others to develop some of the talents and giftings that God has given them. And so we shortchange them, and we shortchange the church if we limit them to the input that I am able to give. So I think that can be a healthy part of transition in seeing God's will on timing for things. I'm needing to really keep moving here. I'm seeing that we're going to run out of time. Brotherhood brings balance to a church. Ephesians 4, we just had that in our Sunday school, and it's a beautiful passage talking about the different parts of the church working together. There's those five ministry gifts and how those ministry gifts can complement each other and how they can balance each other. You know, there may be a person who has the gift of prophecy, and he may speak forth with truth and with forcefulness, and for him the truth is the bottom line. There may be a person with a different gifting that the prophet has completely alienated someone, and the person with a different type of a gifting may be able to get close to that person's heart and speak to his heart. There's ways that a team can bring a lot of balance to each other. You know, there's a tremendous amount of breadth and wisdom that we can have if we have a team with six or seven active pastors. The strength of one can balance the weakness of another. And that one who has a weakness in that area may have a strength that trumps a weakness in that first brother. You know, the popular Protestant model, where there's just one pastor who's supposed to fill all of those roles, really, in many ways, is shortchanging themselves, it seems, because they are saddled with all the weaknesses and the strengths of that one man. I think we have a good model. And just this evening or earlier today, when I was looking at that passage there in that was just read, 1 Corinthians, in Acts, it appears that they were even naming some of the church leaders there in Antioch. Brotherhood is not a one-man show. Brotherhood brings balance to a church. I'm familiar with a church who had a fairly strong leader. It seemed, however, that he was not particularly gifted in his ability to delegate responsibility. Someone reported on a service they attended. As I recall, this man got up and he led the songs. The man had the devotions. Later he brought the message. I don't know what else he did, but he was evidently a fairly capable man. That church has undergone various splits over the years. I think now, after he'd been maybe off to the side for a while, he's back in some position of leadership with a remnant or some of them that are left. Brotherhood is not a one-man show. You know, there are so many ways that a well-functioning church works together. 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the metaphor of the church as a body. And oh, there's some beautiful, beautiful imagery in that metaphor. I have taught on that different times in other places. And there's something wonderful about how the different parts of that body complement each other and how that body works together, functioning under its head in a wonderful way. You know, it's not only the visible parts of the body that are important. My heart, I've never seen, but I understand it's very central to my sense of well-being, and not just my sense of well-being, my well-being itself. My big toe, kind of an ugly thing there, especially the one with the toenail that's a little funny, that helps an awfully lot in us maintaining our balance when we're walking or when we're running. And recently, our church was thrown into a time of extreme sorrow with the sudden, the passing of Anya, went in and out with us from day to day. You know, the logistics for coordinating the events of the next several days were daunting. And all of this was in a backdrop of a lot of grief, numbness, and sorrow. But I was, where I was, I could see you different people that came up to the plate, you different people that came just in the logistics side of it to take responsibility. There was the singers who met together and practiced and gave a ringing, a beautiful message during the funeral and at the cemetery. There were the speakers, there was the food committees that worked tremendously hard, the car parkers, the ushers, the pallbearers, the sound people, the video man, the people that were responsible at the grave. You know, it's a tremendous blessing to see these various gifts at a time like this come up and come into play, and how the church can function together so beautifully. I think of someone like Freddie Yoder from over at Cedar Crest. I assume that Freddie Yoder, I don't know, Chris, are you here tonight? I'm assuming that Freddie Yoder wouldn't have enjoyed having a topic in church. I don't know if he ever did or not. I think he would have found that daunting and maybe kind of intimidating. But Freddie Yoder was awfully handy in the shop, and he had a good heart for helping people. And he blessed people in ways that a well-crafted sermon would not have been able to bless them in that same kind of way. There are so many ways that a well-functioning church works together. Brotherhood within the church brings balance to that church, whether it's on the pastoral team, whether it's working together in a time of emergency, tragedy, whether it's just helping out with a wheelchair ramp that man could fashion in his shop. What would you like to say on this first point? Sorry, I didn't pause after the first one. How brotherhood brings balance to a church. Okay, well, we'll move on. I should have given these verses out earlier. Maybe I will just quickly read this in Proverbs 17:17. A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Brotherhood brings healing in times of adversity. You know, I've been thinking about this brotherhood topic for a while, and my first inclination was, my, we have a long ways to go here in brotherhood here at Center Church. Maybe we could have even called the topic the lost art of brotherhood. But through different circumstances, God has been showing me some tremendously positive examples of brotherhood that you as a brotherhood, or you as brothers and sisters, are living out here. And it's been a challenge, and it's been a blessing to me, and it's given a lot of perspective and roundedness to this topic. I'm grateful to be part of a church that still knows and practices brotherhood. You know, the other day, that other Tuesday, is it 3 weeks ago now, Laverne, that you got the word? And that word came around, and how that just went through us like lightning. Now, what do we do? I was away, came home, and it was like, we need to get out to Laverne's. Let's go to Laverne's. We got there. We weren't near the first people that were there at Laverne's. People were coming in. There was embraces. There was words. There was tears. There was a very solemn group there. Phone calls were coming in. People were being notified. There started to be a myriad of plans that were needing to be organized, plans that you didn't want to make, plans that you felt too numb to make, but plans that nonetheless needed to be made. Someone came in after a while with an armload of pizzas. In the next several days, I observed a lot of brotherhood. There was people there to wash cars, people there to mow the grass. Someone was there pushing augers out of the way in neat lines or whatever they were doing with the augers. Flowers were delivered. People were saying, is there anything that we can do? We want to be there. We want to be there to help. You know, in the midst of this intense grief and pain, brotherhood was at work. Those were some of the physical details, but from far and near, there were prayers mingled with tears that were being offered that ascended and united up there at the throne of God. You know, I can only imagine the pain, the anguish that the Miller family has had in the last several weeks, but how many, many times worse would that pain and anguish have been without brotherhood? There's a tremendous, tremendous strength in brotherhood in the time of adversity. We cannot erase the unpleasant events from our lives, but we can join hands in times of adversity and together seek strength and healing. It is sad to face pain at any point in our lives, but it is ever so much more sad to face pain alone. Could we say, there is no darkness so dark as the darkness faced alone? There is no pain so intense as the pain felt alone. There is no valley so deep as the valley walked alone. We are fragile beings. I'm a man, and I admitted it. We are fragile. We need each other, and as Christians, we have the perfect opportunity to model brotherhood, even in times of adversity. Brotherhood brings healing in those times. What input would you have on the that third point? Healing in times of adversity. And I'm not simplistic enough to say that you've done your job, everything's taken care of. Healing on a deep pain is something that we need to continue to be there as a brotherhood, continue to work at. Just talking with a mother yesterday of a age mate of Anya's that's really struggling. And I think it'd be good to remember everyone that's affected by this situation. If there's nothing else, I want to move on to brotherhood is bearing one another's burdens. I think maybe Dad mentioned that one in this list here. Galatians 6:2, bear you one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. You know, we face a lot of difficult circumstances in life. We face things that are hard for us to do. Right now, the Yoder family is going through some very difficult times, and David already referenced Monday evening over there. I think that was a very appropriate thing, that people got together to help out. This was basically a physical thing. Let's do some cleanup here, there, and see what can be done. And I was thinking on Monday evening, you know, I kind of ought to be at home studying for this topic on brotherhood. But I found it really kind of nice to be out there doing brotherhood instead of just talking about it or planning about it or studying about it. Brotherhood is about bearing one another's burdens. I was really blessed to see Frank there that evening. Frank was pitching in with everybody else. Paul has invested a lot with Frank in his life and his family, and there was Frank coming back and he was reinvesting in the community. I found that a blessing. Think of the time when we were in Nicaragua and we were there as a non-government organization, an NGO. We were seen as the solution to all of these problems. People would come to the white men to try to get help for what their problems were. After Hurricane Mitch, I was very heartened when I saw parts of Nicaragua that weren't as affected by the hurricane gathering goods to send to the parts of Nicaragua that were more affected. It felt like we were coming of age there and people were learning to take responsibilities. Bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I think it's verse 10 in that passage there that says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. That's not really the one I wanted. Verse 6, let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. It's like if you have been blessed, you turn around and bless other people as well. And brotherhood is about bearing one another's burdens. What would you like to say about that point? Okay, seeking the Holy Spirit's direction and blessing just on knowing how to respond. That's obvious. I mean, it goes without saying, but it's a good point. Okay, brotherhood helps us to be accountable. 1 Peter 5:5, likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Harvey, I think you mentioned accountability when we were asking for input here. Brotherhood helps us to be accountable. And Gary referenced this chapter earlier. How we need to interact. And it's like there's a sense that we should respect those elders that are over us. But then he doesn't stop there. Yet all of you be subject one to another. And that is part of that interplay of accountability, I think, that we can experience with each other. What are some of the enemies of brotherhood from this passage or from others?
Jealousy.
Pride.
Individualism.
Excellent.
Haste.
What?
Haste, a hurried lifestyle.
Okay, a hurried lifestyle. Don't have time to be a brother. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Complacent, not being vigilant. But especially, I think, in this context here, it is the area of pride. God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. And it takes a certain humility for me to open my life to you, for you to open your life to me, to let you speak into my life. But that's what that accountability is and that interchange is. You know, as we walk along, we stumble. We need the help of friends to help us, those that see when we stumble, and to help us back up when we fall. You know, many of us are in accountability groups. Some of us men are. Do you ladies have accountability groups too? You're not accountable? Okay. You know, it takes some humility to admit to Harvey that I've been struggling with anger, or that I've been, you know, whatever the situation is. But there is a strength that Harvey and John and I can feel as we share some of the struggles that we're facing. Here's John, just a young fellow. Here's me somewhere in between. There's Harvey that's kind of trying to figure out what he wants to do to pass his time this winter. There's something nice about that accountability, that we open ourselves to each other and we can speak into each other's lives. There's a blessing with that. Keep the ages harmonizing, that's right. And I think we have just about as good a slice there as we could have. Justin Yutzi is our fourth partner, and we have more limited contact with him when he's gone, of course. You know, as we join hands, we are much better equipped to face the enemy. The devil wants us to think that basically that the struggles we are facing, the challenges we are facing, are challenges that we face alone. And when we can be vulnerable enough to share with others, we can join hands and find out that, you know, maybe Harvey has struggled with some of the same things that I'm struggling with, or that me with John, or whatever the situation is. There is a strength in being vulnerable enough to open our lives to others and let others open their lives to us, and that we can help each other. You know, in a church this size, it is so easy for people to fall through the cracks. And I think that is part of the vision for the leadership in establishing these small groups that next Wednesday evening we plan to be meeting in. We deal, I think, so often in superficialities. I fear that we are often driven by what is politically correct than what is good for my brother or what is good for me. You know, what would happen if we would answer this Well, how are you doing today? They'd say, Arlen, not doing too good. My wife and I had an argument. Our bank account is overdrawn. My best cow died. And frankly, I'm struggling. We chuckle almost, but really, I think maybe we would be miles ahead in our brotherhood if we could be that open, be that honest, instead of dealing so much in superficialities. You know, when our family was growing up, we were brought up where the planned church services were times for the whole family to go to church. This included up to 10 children at home at one time, with one indoor bath that would have probably not been considered a full bath by today's standards. And usually there was a fair number of outside livestock chores. Church time came. David and Mary's house, it was kind of expected that we went to church. Later years, especially, Dad made some exceptions for harvest, and I thought that was probably excusable. And I'm thankful to my parents for committing this, or for instilling this kind of a commitment to the church services. You know, today, when I decide to stay at home, and occasionally we do stay at home, I may miss a blessing, but I may also cost my brother a blessing by not participating. You know, if everyone would decide to stay home, use the same excuse that I did the evening I stay at home, have you ever thought what the church service would be like that evening? Be pretty quiet, wouldn't it? Kind of dark. Nobody there to turn on the lights. You know, say I missed a Wednesday evening, and on Sunday, Larry would come up to me and say, Lowell, I saw you weren't there on Wednesday evening. What was going? And I might think that is absolutely none of your business. I don't go nosing into your life. Would you please just leave me alone? Boy, who does he think he is anyway? Boy, after this, I'm going to watch after church. I don't want to be running into Larry. He asked nosy questions. You know, if my basic goals are being accountable, if my basic commitment is to the brotherhood, if I had a good reason for not being in church, Larry's question doesn't have to bother me in the least. Now, if I'm dealing in pretexts or in excuses or in whatever, then I might be trying to dodge Larry the next Sunday that I missed on a Wednesday evening. You know, I would idealize a church where the hard questions don't leave me angry and defensive, but those hard questions are a mutual invitation to practice brotherhood. We need to see church as more than a spectator sport, more than entertainment, more than a trip to the store. We are the church. Our brothers are those and sisters are those sitting in the pews beside us. We care for them, and they care for us. Let's be willing to be accountable to our brothers, and let each one of us be subject one to another. Brotherhood helps us to be accountable. Thoughts on that point? An active brotherhood searches for its lost sheep. Matthew 18, 10 through 14. Matthew 18, I think, has the three lost situation, the lost coin, the lost sheep. Is it Luke that has the lost son as the third one there? Okay. Matthew 18, verse 10. Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99 and goeth into the mountains, and seeketh that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. Several years ago, I think it was maybe in 06, I was teaching at Calvary Bible School. My family was there with me in Arkansas. There were several other teachers there that had their families there as well. And our children enjoyed playing with other children. If it was 06, that would have taken off about 7 years and 2 feet off of Joey, more or less. And Christy would have been younger than Hannah as well, of course. And many of you are familiar with Calvary Bible School. There's a lot of rocks, there's a lot of trees, there's a lot of hills. There's a lot of, it's the Ozark Mountains. And one afternoon, the children were playing together out behind the buildings there. It seems to me to the east, off a little ways out away from the Bible school. And when the children finished their playing, they noticed that Judson did not come back to the buildings with the others. And they went and looked back where they were playing, whoever it was, and they didn't find him there either. Judson's parents did some looking around, and they couldn't find him. After a while, we heard an announcement over the public address system. The announcement was, Judson Stolzfus is lost. Simple enough announcement. Efforts were quickly made to organize search parties. Groups of students fanned out over the hills, or the hill where Judson was last seen. People systematically went through and were checking in the cars. You know, maybe he just crawled into a car and fell asleep. And still others were going through the different buildings and systematically trying to go through rooms and closets and stuff just to see if he might be stuck away somewhere here. The search and rescue people were called, probably 911. Night was coming on. This was the winter, and it was getting cold. People were spreading out in ever-widening circles. I remember just going out, and you'd see off in the distance, here was someone else still farther out on a circle, and they were going around, looking out and calling out, Judson, Judson. The terrain had a lot of brambles, a lot of thorns. They snagged at our good clothes, but people kept hurrying along and calling out, Judson, Judson. But Judson didn't answer. We would hear the calling of other people way off somewhere, calling Judson, Judson, but we didn't hear any Judson responding. People were praying. By now it was basically dark and Judson had not been found. Several emergency vehicles arrived on the campus, and there were these red lights flashing around, whatever. It just gave kind of an eerie sense of urgency to the situation. The terrain was rough and rocky, and just below the Bible school was this rushing creek. You know, had Judson slipped on a muddy rock or a bank? Had he fallen into the creek? What might have happened to a six-year-old falling into a creek? Well, as you can imagine, Judson's parents were extremely, extremely concerned. The evening meal that the cooks had prepared was basically forgotten. The meal was ready, nobody there to eat it. Darkness had fallen. A quick, thorough search through the buildings turned up nothing. Eventually, someone was dispatched to drive down the road and stop in at houses along the way and try to find out, has anyone seen anything of a little boy? Caleb Miller drove off in the opposite direction from where Judson had disappeared, and he pulled in at a house. He was preparing to go up to the door and knock and ask if they had seen anything of a six-year-old boy. The door flew open and a little shaver came flying out and said, are you looking for me? It was Judson. And Caleb was looking for Judson. And I think as he came back, there was a honking of horns. And I mean, there was just all at once this tremor, this noise going through the group there that the lost had been found. You know, Judson had been playing up there with the other children among the rocks on the hill. He was amusing himself for some time, and he'd kind of got off apparently by himself, or maybe he was just there when the others decided it was time to go home. I don't know. When he looked up, he couldn't see his friends. Later, he told his dad, I got scared and started running. And that's not a friend if you're going the wrong direction. Eventually, he came to a clearing. In the clearing was this house. Judson was only six, but he was trying to reason this out in his mind. Well, he thinks he'd better go up to the house and knock and find out if these people know where Calvary Bible School is, and they could maybe tell him where to go or could take him there or something like that. But nobody came to the door. He tried the door, and it was unlocked, so he decided, well, he's going to have to go in. It was a lot warmer inside than it was outside. He figured he'd just have to wait until the people came home, and then he'd have to ask them, and they could help him find his way back to the Bible school or whatever. Someone, in fact, from the Bible school had driven in earlier, but before he was able to come out on the porch, they turned around and left again. So meanwhile, Judson was thinking this thing through, and he figured, you know, he'd just as well make himself comfortable and lay down and sleep. So he'd taken off his jacket, I think, already, and there was a bed in the back of this trailer house or something. Fortunately, he was still awake. Had he gone to bed and slept, he would have been one of the only ones in that general area that would have slept well that night. You know, word spread quickly that the lost had been found. That bell was rung, that big old triangular bell was rung, but there was a lot of noise in the woods, and the searchers didn't necessarily hear that. And whereas Judson had now been found, here were all these searchers that were still out and not accounted for. Little by little, the parties started drifting back in. Some of the people were carried across the creek so that not everybody needed to get wet. And the principal was there, and we were just kind of rejoicing together. I can just about see Judson's parents gathered around that light pole, and that it was almost like his father's knees were weak as they were there in gratitude and rejoicing that the lost had been found. Principal asked me to offer a prayer of thanksgiving, and we had a wonderful prayer of thanksgiving. And about then, I think it was starting to soak into us, you know, there's still a lot of other people that are unaccounted for. I think our two daughters were in the search party out there. It was night. There were many searchers still out and about. You know, throughout the ordeal, people had been praying. People had enlisted the help of their communities back home, and they were praying. And God was gracious, and the lost was found. Finally, bit by bit, group by group, the groups of searchers came back in, and eventually everyone was accounted for. And what a blessing. What a blessing in a time of rejoicing. You know, later that evening, I spent some time standing outside in the cold and trying to imagine how it would have been like to be a six-year-old boy out there in the hills in that cold. I think the temperature got down to, was it 18 degrees, something like that night. Would a six-year-old boy have been able to survive the night? I don't really know. Matthew 18:10, take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99 and goeth into the mountains and seeketh that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. The passage here talks about Christ's ministry and about Christ's passion. He came to seek and to save that which was lost. He goes on and talks about how the shepherd interacts with his sheep. You know, there was probably between 100 and 150 people there at Calvary Bible School that time. Someone could have said, you know, there's 100 or more of these that are safe and sound. Why worry about that one that's lost out there? That wasn't the response at all. People dropped what they were doing to join in the search party. There was a sense of urgency. Darkness was coming on. The temperature was dropping. The principal could have said, you know, this is a sad situation. I feel for the family, but I think we're going to keep a low profile here. You know, if Judson is found soon, we won't have caused a lot of needless panic, a lot of embarrassment, whatever. The student body will have gone on with their activities, done their studies, and it won't be a problem. And if he's found, there won't be all that embarrassment and stigma for that little fellow. I mean, how would it feel to know that everybody else there knew that he was lost? But that wasn't the motivation at all. The announcement went out, and it was an urgent call that trumped all the other activities of the evening. People didn't say, I can't go out there, I have good clothes on. Many of us had good clothes that got snagged by the briars and the brambles. Someone could have said it was Judson's fault that he got lost. It's Judson's responsibility to find himself. Others could have said it's too cold out there and I don't want to help search. Someone else, just where were the parents anyway? How was he out there all by himself, alone? But no, people made sacrifices. They made them willingly. Why did they make the sacrifices? Brotherhood, they made the sacrifice because there was someone lost. There was someone lost, and nothing was going to stop them in trying to restore that person or to find that person that was lost. The food was left untouched. The studies were dropped. The volleyball court fell silent. I understand that the ball dropped to the ground with nobody to hit it. The players vacated the court and were rushing off to get into action. The woods were huge, the drop-offs were many, a lot of brambles, but people were united in the effort to find this person who was lost. How many of you think you would have joined that party that night if you'd have been there? I have a good feeling that most of you would have joined that party. How many of you would have considered your Sunday pants kind of incidental to the case? I don't know if I still have those pants or not. Judy, do you remember? I don't know. How many of you would have gladly foregone your supper for the cause of the lost person? You know, let's examine some of the characteristics of this search effort. There was an urgent call by the principal to the 99 to seek the one that was lost. People immediately mobilized to address the problem. Urgent, fervent prayers, Nathan, ascended to heaven from those Arkansas hills. Many others from other communities joined in the effort. People did without food as they searched. There was a huge rejoicing among the family when the lost one was found. And there was a huge rejoicing in the whole student body when the lost one was found. You know, for me, there was particular interest in this search because it could have been my son or my daughter. They had been playing together with that group back there on the hill. Now, this was a physical story of a young person who became lost. The story of a unified group of people who were profoundly concerned about this loss and mobilized to address the issue. I've been burdened that I think when it comes to spiritual losses, that we're often pretty lackadaisical and fairly noncommittal, that we don't attack this with the same kind of fervor that group attacked the case of that lost boy there in the Ozarks. What do we do if someone leaves our midst for the pleasures of the world? Let's just, I'm already after 9, I see, I'm sorry. Let me just briefly hit a few points here. The searchers need to know that someone is lost. There may be some embarrassment, but if the searchers aren't mobilized, there's not going to be a lot of searching happening. People need to join the search. You know, we may make mistakes. We may not say everything quite right. But if we have a fervent love, that can cover a multitude of missteps. Verbal missteps, I think. People don't need to play the blame game. Was that this person's parents' fault? Was that this other person's fault? What was the situation? Judson was lost, and it wasn't that important if it was Joseph's fault that he got lost, if it was his parents' fault that he got lost, or if it was the principal or whoever it was that said they could go back there to play. He was lost, and it was time for everybody to mobilize to see what they could do to help find the child. We realize, as others, that it could have been me, but for the grace of God, that was back on that mountain, or it could have been my child that was back on that mountain. And I think that realization helps put things in perspective so beautifully. Someone's lost. Let's not quibble about the details on how it happened or what the situation is. Let's get the word out. Let's mobilize. Let's get together. Let's storm the gates of heaven with those prayers from all sides. And let's actively search for that person that's lost. What does anyone have to say at this point? I'm taking more of my time than I had, and I invite your input. I am blessed this evening to be a part of Center Church. By God's grace, we've all been blessed. I've witnessed many demonstrations of brotherhood just in the last couple of weeks. And I have a dream that we could continue to grow, that we could become vulnerable with each other, that we can even welcome the rasp of our loving brother as he takes some of the rough edges off us, that we could be willing, as we say at communion time, to approach and to be approached, and to actively participate in brotherhood, that we could walk in the light, realizing that all things are anyway naked and open before the eyes of him with whom we have to do, and that we can be actively involved in restoring those people, my brotherhood, that have somehow got lost, and they're out there in the cold night. And it's our duty to show them through brotherhood God's love and to help bring them back. That's all I have. Michael, go ahead.